You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Noah Oldham, and I'm here with Vance Pittman. And today, Vance, we're beginning a two-part series discussing trauma-informed care in the local church. In this first episode, we're going to discuss what it looks like to assess your city to determine the vulnerable populations. In our next episode, we're going to look at ways that your church can respond based on that local assessment.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited to be talking about this today, and I'm really pumped about the guests that we have on the podcast today, because when Hope Church, the church that God allowed me to be a part of planting about 2014, 2015, we'd always been engaging our city, but we really wanted to go to the next level in this arena of trauma-informed care. And so we did what the only thing we knew to do. Travis and I began to just look across the country at different ministry centers that we felt like were doing this well, but also doing it well, being rooted in the gospel from a gospel-centered mentality. And God led us to Shreveport, Louisiana, to a lady that I'm about to introduce to you that literally was killing the game in that part of the country in this arena and doing it from such a gospel-centered and church-centered platform that we just fell in love with the ministry. It was called The Hub there in Shreveport, Louisiana, serving in areas of homelessness and poverty, as well as those that have been sexually exploited. And when we met Cassie, God just shaped our hearts around the things that she was doing. We actually employed her, brought her to Vegas. And for years now, she's lived kind of half the year in Vegas and half the year in Shreveport with her family. But Cassie Hammett is with us today and has just a wealth of experience and knowledge on this subject. So Cassie, we are super pumped to have you on the New Churches Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for having me.
Cassie, one of the things that's been so cool over the last year or so is you have been engaging with what we call Send Network Orientation. You've been coming and helping church planters at the earliest stages learn how to engage their city with the gospel. And this subject is super important. It's actually the language around it is newer to me. And I am so really, really excited to hear you speak on this. So just jumping out of the gate here, what is trauma-informed care? Help us to understand that phrase and what that looks like.
Totally. So I think trauma-informed care is a buzzword, thankfully, lately. A lot of people are talking about trauma, talking about trauma-informed care. The easiest way to describe what it is, because there's actually not one definition. Like if you look it up, there's like 1,000 different definitions of it. But it's an approach to engaging people that have a history of trauma. Now, that can be what we would call big T traumas, something like a major disaster, a major tragedy, all the way down to what are called little T traumas, which are kind of those chronic overtime traumas that can be inflicted on your life, whether that's at childhood, a divorce, things like that. So trauma-informed care is an approach to engaging people with histories of trauma that recognizes the presence of trauma and also understands the role that trauma plays in someone's life, both past and present, and then goes a step further to integrate that knowledge into policies, procedures, practices. So it's basically, in layman's terms, remembering when you're addressing someone who has experienced trauma, that behaviorally what you're seeing may have a root in trauma, recognizing the impact that trauma has on a life, and then acting accordingly. That's kind of the best way that I could describe it.
I love that. It's engaging people as you engage them with the gospel, understanding that people have all kinds of past, all kinds of histories, and they bring that into the discipleship process. That's really, really good. I know specifically you talk a lot about the vulnerable populations that are in communities and identifying those. Who make up the vulnerable populations that our churches can minister to?
Yeah. So I have kind of two answers to this. One is on the trauma front. The reality is that most people in congregations would fall into a category of someone who has experienced trauma. I think that's sort of a new line of thinking, possibly, because I think we would look at our congregation and say, who in here has experienced a big T trauma? And there may be a smaller population, but the reality is that anytime people gather on a Sunday or for a service, that room is full of people that have a history of trauma. So that one of my answers is when it comes to trauma, it's not just vulnerable populations that experience trauma. We all of us on this podcast have experienced trauma, whether that's little T or big T. And especially when you apply spirituality, when you apply the gospel, church, religion, you start getting into some tricky territory for people who have experienced trauma connected to relationships that were connected to religion. So that is something we see very often in the vulnerable populations we're serving that come into our programs, is that there is a very high wall for them to be able to hear anything about God, not because of God, but because their trauma is attached to someone, because most trauma is attached to relationships, especially chronic trauma, and that person abused them or abandoned them or whatever it might be. And so in the brain, all that gets tied together. And all of that becomes very muddy for someone who's trying to engage in Christianity or engage in a church service. So one of my answers is that there are far more people already in your church who have experienced trauma. But on the other side, to answer the, you know, who are the vulnerable populations, I actually used when you look in the New Testament at the word poor, because the word poor is used quite frequently throughout Scripture. When you look at all the different definitions of that word, it kind of is a little bit more of an expansive word than just like materially poor. Because I think often people read the poor and they decide that means just materially. And so I wanted to kind of expand that definition a little bit. When you look at Scripture, it can mean people that are caught in social power structures that existed when back in Jesus's time, especially. Materially poor is involved in that, but it could also be people of low status. So people with disabilities, disease, in Bible times, women and children are also included in that. And then you have the list of the orphan, the widow, the stranger, you know, those who are sick with disease. You see this in Scripture too, you know, women in prostitution, social outsiders, certain ethnic groups, and then people whose life choices have placed them outside of the sort of acceptable religious circles. And that's kind of what you see in the New Testament as sort of an expanded view of the word poor, or like maybe of vulnerable populations. So that it kind of gives you a much wider lens for who we're talking about when we say vulnerable, because there's a lot of vulnerability that exists even outside of material poverty.
Cass, I was going to say, it's one of the things I've loved about you since we met you and watched your ministry, and now I've helped watched you help us develop this kind of heartbeat ministry in Las Vegas, is the way you take things back to the text and to Scripture and understanding, like you just said, with this idea of poor, it's not just a word that refers to material things. That Greek word that's there, that's used often in Scripture, really is a word that refers to being helpless or being in a position or posture of need. Sometimes that need is material and physical, but that need and that helplessness can be in so many different avenues, and depending on context and culture and even time period, it can be different. So Cassie really helped us at Hope Church to understand not just these pockets of people that are out there, but how that affects so many of us in our own churches that are already there, that have been impacted by things, and helping them to navigate that. So Cassie, I really appreciate you pointing that out and giving more examples of that. I think it'd be super helpful.
Yeah. So some examples of using that more expanded idea of who could be considered vulnerable, quote unquote, would be the homeless, obviously, those in material poverty, victims of abuse, both physical and sexual, refugees, foster children, children in the foster care system, the bio parents of children in the foster care system, the elderly in some communities could be considered vulnerable, those who drug addicts, those who use substances, chronically mentally ill, those struggling with mental health. I mean, literally, there's 1,000 different things that could fall in those categories. But just for people's like frame of reference, it is just incredibly helpful to have a wider lens for who might be experiencing vulnerability. Because if your lens is dialed in too tight, it could possibly keep you from seeing the people that need to be most seen in your community. So.
Well, and Cassie, you just pointed that out. And like, for example, for me, often before I met you and got exposed to what God was using you to do, when you talked about the poor, if I heard somebody talk about the poor or the needy, I immediately thought about the rescue mission or the person at the intersection holding the cardboard sign. That was my understanding of who we were targeting when we used words like this. And it was through relationship with you that it so broadened that understanding to think about how we are able to come alongside people that have experienced trauma and are in need of compassion. And it's beginning to see people through that lens. There's a scripture that says Jesus saw the multitudes and he felt compassion. And that word see there means to see and understand, to identify with, to perceive. And until, Cassie, I'd really developed a relationship with you and what you were doing there in Shreveport, I didn't really even see a lot of those other categories of what poor and vulnerable and helpless look like. And it was through relationship with you and you investing in our church that we began to see the multitudes in our own city and see the multitudes in our own congregation and begin to mobilize to meet those needs.
Yeah.
Cassie, this is super helpful for that idea to be expanded so every church leader, every church pastor, and church planter can see just the opportunity to engage at such a high level. But now the question becomes, with all that there is, the populations are varied and the city is big, what steps can a church take to begin to assess the vulnerable populations that are represented in their local community?
Yeah, so I think we have this really cool tool on the Sin Relief side of the website, a city assessment that we developed that you can use. But before even getting to that, I think it's important to know a few things. So one, I think often when we go to assess our city, we go to it with a deficit lens. So we go into it asking, where are the needs? Where are people struggling? What do we not have? And those are not bad questions. But when we go into it with a deficit lens, we actually run the risk of missing quite a bit. So what kind of how we talk about assessing a city is to use what's called an asset-based lens, which goes into that assessment asking what is already here, what already exists, what is God already doing, what do we have already? But it also takes that a step further and even applies that to the vulnerable populations. So often, I think what people don't understand, if you've never spent time with people who are maybe considered vulnerable, is put yourself in their shoes. What would it be like if everyone approached you from a deficit standpoint, saying, what don't you have? When the reality is, no matter what your material circumstances are, everyone has something. That is a God-given, that's a promise that God creates everyone with a set of skills and talents and personality, a sense of humor, things they're good at. And so we would even say when you approach vulnerable populations, asking from an asset-based perspective, what do they already have? What can they contribute? What do they have to say about what's happening in the city? So I would say, you know, that would be sort of the stance that you could start from. But as far as assessing your city, one of the things we say is to learn from a posture of friendship. So one of the things we always say too when we're consulting is please do your homework. In these breakouts that I've been doing for SIN Network, which I've loved doing, I say, if you don't hear another word I say, please hear me say, do your homework. Because I think one of the biggest downfalls of the church engaging the vulnerable is a lack of doing their homework and a lack of actual knowledge. And so what can happen is a church can launch off a new outreach strategy. They sit in a room, they plan it all together, they get all the supplies, and they show up where these people are, and they do not know who lives here. They do not know the cultures. They don't know the actual needs. And so you get into some really toxic situations. And this is actually a very, very common thing that happens among churches. It's like one of the number one things I try to help from happening. You know, there's a lot of assumptions that can be made. You can see physical poverty and make what you can determine, hey, this is what our church needs to do for XYZ. But the problem with that is that it may actually not be accurate. An example of this would be showing up in an apartment complex and just giving out free food because you either heard or imagine that the apartment complex is low income. Well, that's a pretty massive assumption that everyone in that apartment needs access to food. And so it can create a very toxic situation. We had a church one time that was doing that door to door on a monthly basis and just very frustrated about the lack of traction they were getting, and like, then they came back and said, we found out that the residents are like selling the food. And we were like, well, yeah, because did they need the food? Like, did you ask if they needed the food? And what we really determined was most people in that apartment were getting food stamps. They had food in their pantry. So then when they got this free food, they were, of course, because they were in survival mode in some other ways, using that food to make ends meet in other ways. And it's just really damaging to, I mean, can you imagine someone walking up to you and being like, hey, here's all the things I assume you need me to tell you. Like it's offensive. And so, you know, we always want to encourage churches to do their homework and to do that from a posture of friendship. You can do an assessment and look at all the demographics and you can ask all the right questions, but that's one thing. What actually gets you the truest information about your city is actual relationship with people. If your church feels called to serve the homeless population, this is always really funny when we're consulting. They're like, okay, what's the first step in, you know, serving the homeless? And I'm like, in 2 months, I want you to come back to me and I want you to tell me 5 names that you know, like you as the leader, not your team. The truth is like, as you're in relationship with the vulnerable, it transforms you. That's the most important part. It changes you because a lot in me had to change for me to be an advocate for the vulnerable. I had to change. There was a lot in me, a lot of assumptions, a lot of baggage, a lot of way of thinking. So it transforms you and it informs you. So you can then operate from a place of knowing, because these are now people you know who are telling you the truth, who are saying, no, I actually don't need access to food, but here is something consistent here's a consistent wall I'm hitting or a consistent deficit in my life. And then when your church body shows up in those areas to meet those needs, those people not only have needs met, they feel known. And that's actually the most important part, because the reality is people can, in most cities, can go and find food. Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't do food ministry. We do. But that's actually not the most important part for people in vulnerability. When you ask people in poverty what they need, often it's not material answers. Often it's that they feel unseen and isolated. They don't belong anywhere. And so at the root of addressing vulnerability is relationship, because we're on this podcast in part because of the relationships in our lives. We are stable and thriving, one, because of God, obviously, but the other factor is because we have people. Mm. You know, I always say, if my house burned down tomorrow, I have a very Southern mom, very Southern mama. And within 20 minutes, I would be fine. because that's how long it would take for her to drive. That's how long the drive is. I'd have all my needs met. I would have somewhere to sleep. My friends would rally. Our bank account would have money. I mean, a very tragic thing would be tragic, but would not be the start of a domino effect. And so I think what's important for people to understand when they talk about assessing their city is if you just show up with clipboards door to door and you're just asking demographic questions, that is not, that's not going to help. That's not going to get you very far. But if you connect relationally, if you make an effort to get to know the people that you feel called to serve and then operate accordingly, like take what you're learning about them and put that into practice, that is a very different way of assessing your city. So we kind of break this, the assessment of a city into some categories. The city itself, meaning from like a macro level, city leadership, we ask a bunch of questions about, you know, who influences things when it comes to the vulnerable, who are the decision makers when it comes to the populations that we're talking about, who are the gatekeepers, you know, those kind of like macro questions. What are the breakdowns of your city's poverty, abuse numbers, foster care numbers, you know, just getting some really good macro views of your city. And then we sort of break it down into from there, we would say we would want any church to get a good picture of their city in some other categories. So poverty and homelessness, we have a list of questions that we ask about that. Exploitation, meaning people who are vulnerable to prostitution, vulnerable to sex trafficking. We want to know some stuff about those populations. Child-focused issues. And people will often say, well, we feel called to this one population. And that's awesome. But that one population is part of a bigger narrative. So you can't just isolate off and say, well, we only want to serve foster children. Well, the reality is that foster children also land in several other categories of things happening in your city. So to assess a city, and we have a tool, it's a free tool on Sin Relief. If you go to the Strengthening Communities tab and you can download it. But all of the questions are going to actually make you meet people though. It's very That's strategic. Awesome. It's not like who's in charge. It's, well, what do they say about XYZ? Because and Vance knows this because we've done this in Vegas, but to move the needle for the vulnerable, it requires far more people at the table than just that population. It requires trust at every level of your city. And so people can download that tool and see just practically what that looks like. But I think sort of at a macro level, it's just remembering that the best way to assess especially a vulnerable population is to just spend time with them and to walk away and be like, man, I had that wrong. Because that is mostly what's going to happen is you walk away saying that is not what I thought the case would be.
That's so true. And Cassie, you said something in there that was a nugget that I want everybody to take away. And what I heard you say, and Cassie, you correct me if I'm not right, but we all have things in our lives that are tragic. But what keeps tragic from becoming traumatic are relationships. I have tragedies. You have tragedies, but we have a relationship network around us that keeps those tragedies from becoming traumatic, where a lot of times what makes people vulnerable is they experience the same tragedy, but without the relational equity around them. And so those tragedies just become traumatic because there's no relationship in their life to bring them out of that sense of tragedy, like you described with your mom coming over. And that's why this thing of relationships, and that takes it back to scripture. It's all about relationships.
Cassie, this has been so helpful. On our next episode, we're going to discuss ways your church can respond to these vulnerable populations with trauma-informed care. You won't want to miss it. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.